Hey Mason, it's Thursday, July 9th, 2026. Coming up on today's show, a quick radar sweep over the newest research the team has flagged and kept for a closer look, the stuff worth having on your radar even if it's not fully digested yet. Then we'll pull back and do the weekend review, checking in on the OCR pipeline for those legacy texts, the retrieval system grounded in community-approved books, and where the per-stage evaluation work stands. Community-governed data isn't a side note in this project, it's the whole architecture, and that shapes how we talk about every one of these updates. Let's get into the radar briefing first and see what landed this week. On the radar this week, a cluster of papers worth flagging for the pipeline work. First, a paper called Healthier Language Models looks at retrieval augmented generation for public health question answering, and it's a close match for what you're building with Simon. The authors ran a systematic sweep across different retrieval augmented generation configurations, checking retrieval quality and how faithful the generated answers stayed to the retrieved sources. That's exactly the kind of per-stage evaluation discipline you're trying to build into the Lakota pipeline. Not just does the answer sound right, but did it actually come from the approved sources, and did the retrieval step surface the right material in the first place? Worth reading closely for evaluation methodology, even though the domain is public health, not language preservation. Next, a paper on rethinking Indic artificial intelligence through a lens of cultural heritage preservation. This one sits right next to your own framing of language sovereignty. It's written by a team working on Indic languages, and it argues that building AI for linguistically diverse, culturally significant languages can't be treated as a scaled-down version of the high resource case. The preservation goal and the technical goal pull against each other in specific ways, and the paper works through that tension. Given that you're building this around community governance from the ground up, it's a useful outside check on how another team is thinking about the same problem from a different linguistic tradition. Then there's a run of papers that all land on the same underlying question. How do you get a language model to perform well in a language it barely saw during training? One study looks at uncertainty estimation across multilingual multiple-choice question answering, and its most useful finding is that having the model reason in English first, then apply that reasoning to a low-resource language question, measurably improves performance and reliability. That's a concrete, testable trick for the evaluation harness. A second paper works on cross-lingual transfer for speech recognition, going from Sinhala to Divihi, which is a nice test case for the general question of how much a related, better-resourced language can carry over to one with very little data. A third, called PluraMath, extends math reasoning evaluation beyond high-resource languages, which matters less for direct application and more as a reminder that evaluation benchmarks themselves are usually built English first, and that gap quietly limits what you can even measure. Last, a paper on cognitive pivot translation for Mongolian, specifically the traditional vertical script version, which is digraphic, meaning the same language is written in two different, incompatible writing systems depending on context. The paper deals with the ambiguity that creates for translation systems. That's structurally close to considerations around Lakota orthography, where inconsistent historical spelling systems create similar headaches for training and evaluation data. Even though the language is unrelated, the technical approach to handling script-level ambiguity is transferable. Nothing today changes any immediate build priorities, but the reasoning transfer trick and the retrieval faithfulness evaluation approach are both worth pulling into the next round of pipeline work. Stepping back from the individual papers already covered this week, two threads run through everything the radar kept, and they're worth pulling together because they point in opposite directions on the same problem. How do you trust a system when you don't have much data to build it on? The first thread is retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, and this was a genuinely heavy week for it. Start with a paper out of the public health space from a team including Felix Feldman and Joshua Harris that did a systematic evaluation of RAG configurations, swapping retrieval strategies, checking what actually gets pulled back, and scoring faithfulness, meaning whether the generated answer actually matches what the retrieved documents say. That's the same question the Triage paper covered earlier this week was asking, just from the instrumentation side rather than the evaluation side. Triage wanted to localize where in the pipeline a failure happened. This public health paper wants to know, across many configurations, which one is least likely to fail in the first place. Put those two together and you get a fuller picture instrument each stage so you know where things break, and systematically sweep configurations so you know which setup breaks least. Then there's a cluster of papers this week aimed specifically at the failure mode that matters most for grounded systems, hallucination and misinformation. Not as a vague quality problem, but as something you can localize and defend against. One paper, called GASP, for grounding-aware sensitivity by perturbation, from Muhammad Al-Bukh detects hallucinations at the level of individual spans of text by perturbing the input and watching how sensitive the output is to the grounding evidence. If a claim barely reacts to having its supporting evidence removed, that's a signal it wasn't really grounded in it to begin with. Another paper, Mirage, tackles a related but distinct problem, defending long-form RAG against misinformation pollution, meaning what happens when some of the documents in your retrieval corpus are themselves wrong or adversarial. And a third one, on candidate-constrained RAG for a benchmark called long-eval RAG, focuses on citation-aware evidence aggregation, making sure every claim in a long answer can be traced back to a specific, constrained set of candidate passages rather than blending sources into something ungroundable. Line those three up, and a pattern falls out the field's definition of good RAG has shifted in the last year from did it retrieve relevant documents to can every sentence in the output be traced to a specific piece of evidence, and can we tell when it can't? That's directly the same standard standard the RAG pipeline for the language work needs to hit, because the corpus there is small, closed, and community approved rather than an open web crawl, so misinformation pollution isn't really the risk, drift away from the approved sources is. The perturbation-based detection idea from the grounding sensitivity paper and the citation-constrained aggregation idea from the long eval paper are both things worth prototyping directly against that pipeline. Pull a claim from a generated answer, remove its cited source, and see whether the model's confidence actually drops. If it doesn't, that's the same signal those authors are chasing, applied to a corpus of a few hundred community-approved pages instead of millions of web documents. One more RAG paper worth flagging because it's a genuine change in mechanism rather than another evaluation method. A team led by Haotian Zhou and Weiran Huang proposed a teacher-regularized reinforcement learning approach for cross-lingual RAG, where the evidence is in a high-resource language like English, but the question and answer need to happen in a lower-resource target language. Instead of just translating everything and hoping quality survives the round trip, they use a stronger teacher model to regularize the reward signal so the smaller cross-lingual model learns to go where the teacher goes, evidence-wise. That's a meaningfully different design decision than the retrieve-then-translate pipelines that have been the default, and it's worth remembering specifically because it treats English evidence as a resource to be transferred from rather than a language to be worked around. Which is the second big thread this week, transfer, as the actual lever behind almost every low-resource result, even when the papers don't say so explicitly. A paper on cross-lingual speech recognition transfer from Sinhala to Divihi by Lukmal Ilyas and Nevidu Jayatileke is transfer between two closely related languages, one much better resource than the other. A study on uncertainty estimation across multilingual and cross-lingual multiple-choice question answering from Andrea Alfarano and colleagues found that reasoning done in English improves performance when the target task is in a low-resource language, which is functionally the same transfer trick as the RAG paper above, just without retrieval in the loop. Plurimath, extending mathematical reasoning evaluation beyond high-resource languages, is measuring the size of the gap that this kind of transfer is trying to close. And Kopai, addressing digraphic low-resource Mongolian in its traditional vertical script, is dealing with a transfer problem of a different kind, not cross-lingual but cross-script, where the same language exists in two writing systems, and the model has to disambiguate which script convention it's actually looking at before anything else can happen. Then there's a long tail of single-language, single-team efforts that didn't individually move much but collectively say something about where the field's attention is going. A document understanding benchmark for complex Bangla forms, a manually annotated Sinhala sentiment dataset for market analysis, a text-to-speech system for digital preservation of Afiki, a Luxembourgish spoken question answering set built with synthetic text-to-speech augmentation, and a study on jointly improving dialect identification and speech recognition across Indian languages using multimodal feature fusion. None of these are individually surprising work. They're exactly the kind of dataset plus baseline paper you'd expect for an underserved language. But taken as a set of 6 or 7 this week alone, they say the low-resource NLP space is scaling in breadth much faster than it's scaling in shared infrastructure. Every one of these is a bespoke pipeline built mostly from scratch for one language, which is the same situation the language work has been in, and it's the same argument for why data-efficient adaptation and transfer learning matter more than raw dataset size. Nobody in this list has the luxury of a huge corpus, so the leverage has to come from somewhere else, whether that's a related language, a stronger reasoning model, or synthetic augmentation. The third thread, smaller this week but worth tracking, is optical character recognition, or OCR, for historical and low-resource documents. The medieval Latin manuscript paper already covered this week landed on a specific, almost counterintuitive conclusion. Simpler translation and OCR pipelines beat more complex ones for this kind of legacy material. Set that next to a paper released the same week, Hunyuan OCR-1.5, which is a lightweight OCR vision language model explicitly built to handle ancient scripts and low-resource multilingual text better and faster, using an agentic system to construct its own training data. Those two results are in some tension. One says don't overbuild the pipeline. The other is a much more capable general-purpose OCR model showing up right when that conclusion was reached. The honest takeaway isn't that either paper is wrong, it's that simpler is better was true for the specific pipelines that paper tested, and that conclusion has a shelf life measured in months when models like this keep shipping. Worth an actual bake-off next, take the legacy OCR pipeline currently in use and run the same manuscript pages through something like this newer general OCR model and see whether the simpler wins conclusion still holds once a stronger baseline is in the mix. The other item that deserves its own mention rather than folding into a theme is the cultural heritage paper on Indic AI, already covered earlier this week, because it's the one paper this week that talked about data sovereignty directly rather than implicitly. Everything else in the low-resource cluster, the Bangla forms, the Sinhala sentiment work, the Afik speech synthesis, is doing sovereignty-adjacent work without naming it, building datasets for a specific community's language, usually with local researchers involved, but without an explicit governance framing. That gap is worth noticing on its own. A lot of low-resource NLP right now optimizes for closing the performance gap between high and low-resource languages, and comparatively little of it asks who controls the resulting dataset or model afterward. That's the one place this week's radar and the actual working model for the language project diverge most sharply from the field's default, and it's worth keeping that distinction sharp rather than assuming low-resource NLP paper and sovereignty-respecting NLP paper are the same category, because most of this week's papers were the former without being the latter. So, three things to actually carry forward. First, prototype the grounding sensitivity and citation-constrained ideas from the RAG faithfulness papers against the existing pipeline, since a small closed corpus is exactly the setting those techniques were built for. Second, watch for whether the reasoning transfer trick, doing the heavy lifting in a high-resource language and transferring the result, has any analog worth testing here, the way it clearly does for the multilingual bilingual question answering and cross-lingual RAG papers this week. And third, don't let simpler pipeline wins harden into a permanent conclusion for OCR work without retesting it against whatever general-purpose OCR model is newest, because this week alone produced a plausible challenger to that conclusion the same week it was reached. Taken together, this week's papers point the same direction. The frontier of language AI is shifting away from English-only benchmarks and toward the harder, messier work of serving low-resource and culturally specific language as well. Whether that's retrieval-grounded health answers, honest uncertainty estimates across languages, or speech and translation systems built for scripts and communities that usually get ignored. That's the through line. That's all for today, Mason. Rest up, and I'll see you in the next briefing.